Hello, and welcome to this month's episode of the Women of Color Empowered Show, hosted by Kimberly Lee Miner, CEO of the Women of Color Retail Alliance, www.wocretailalliance.org. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, producer of the show on the Incandescent Radio Network and Incandescent TV, where we bring you fascinating interviews by entrepreneurs around the country. Our favorite question, what's your story? We know you are going to love today's guest. She is fashion industry executive and CNBC correspondent Sandra Campos, an internationally recognized retail tech CEO, entrepreneur, and exec. Sandra is the child of entrepreneurial immigrant parents. Her upbringing was characterized by a focus on education, helping her family's tortilla business from a very young age, and experimenting with her own entrepreneurial ventures in fashion. Sandra's love for fashion and buying led her to New York City, where she was thrown completely into the deep end, she says. What followed were many years of multiple jobs, paying off debt, and eating potatoes for lunch, all of which showed Sandra the importance of resourcefulness, grit, and never giving up. We know Kimberly and Sandra will have so many insightful and helpful things to say today. So this will be part one of a two-part series that we will promote on the Incandescent channels, as well as WOCRA's iTunes, Spotify, and iHeartRadio channels. So ladies, let's get started. Over to you, Kimberly.
First of all, you are an amazing rock star CEO of WOCRA and of everything else. So I'm so happy to be here, Kim. Thanks so much for having me.
Yes. And I'm so excited. And thank you for that, because everyone, you don't know this, but when I met Sandra, we met over email. Someone introduced us because we were going to be on the same panel and she was moderating. And I've been on other panels and people were just really uptight, and it was just not who you were. I don't know. I think from the first email, and then I'm thinking, wait, this is Sandra Campos, who's on MSNBC, and she's here. And she was the CEO of Diane von Furstenberg. And she's just emailing like, she's just a regular chick. And it was from there that we got to know each other. And here's what women's relationships should be. And, I spent a lot of time talking about closing the gap for women, pay gap, professional gap, support gap. And I never had to think about that with you, because you were such a role model on what women supporting women really meant. And I'm bringing this full circle to what you just said about being the CEO. When I was offered that position, it was shortly after that, we were at a dinner. And I said, remember this? I was like, I don't know what to do. I've been offered this opportunity, but it's a nonprofit. I don't know. And you sat there, you looked at me and you said, what is there to think about? If you do this the way I think you're going to do this, you're going to influence an industry and you're going to know every CEO of every retail company and every part of retail. Huh? What is there to think about, Kimberly? Right? Do you remember that?
I do. And look at you now, right? I mean, it's a pretty incredible time, because obviously retail in general has been turned upside down many times in the last couple of decades, several times. And I feel like we used to have at least a break in between those roller coaster rides and dips. And now there's just no break. It's just a dip. No break. Maybe you have a little bit of a rise and you go back down again. You know, it's just happening so quickly. But with that said, you know, I don't know about your experience, but certainly my experience when I first started in this industry, there really wasn't what we're calling now is communities. We didn't talk about communities. We didn't talk about community building. There were no other Latinas. I didn't have Latina colleagues, or there weren't that many. I mean, women in senior positions, that was a whole nother thing. But we talk about women of color in general. Did we see an industry full of it? Maybe at the store level. Maybe, you know, when you're talking about perhaps some logistics, perhaps, you know, some other areas, but really not a very inclusive industry at the time, I would say. And I think that what we've been able to see is that we have women of color, we have women of color who can make an impact. And hopefully by building these communities and what you're doing with WOCRA as well, by elevating, by highlighting, by featuring, then more people can see what they can be. And I think at the end of the day, that's what's the most important thing that I can think we can accomplish and we can achieve, whether it's together, whether it's individually. It's just trying to be that that model of impact so that we can move more people, so that more people can also create that space, can invite other people into the room and let them have their own voice.
So important. And you're right. I mean, when I started, I remember I was in Macy's executive training program. I think I was on the third rotation. And it's the first time I had seen a senior person who looked like me, right? Because there wasn't very much, right? And I remember kind of like almost stalking her. But I was like, hi. And she just didn't give me the time of day. And we were leaving one day at the same time. And I was walking in the parking lot and I said, you know, have I done something to you? And so she's like, why would you ask me that? I said, because I was so excited when I got here and I saw you, because I've been now at Macy's for 3 years and you're the first more senior person, you know, you've done this before. And so I was really excited because I thought I could ask you questions, you know, you could give me some guidance. And she said, why would I do that? And I said, well, why wouldn't you do that? She said, well, I've worked my way to this point and I've, you know, been in this industry now for almost 15 years. You've been in it for 3. You're going to have to figure it out, right? And so that was 1990, right? And so throughout my career, I've wanted to be what I didn't have. And I always got that sense from you that you also were like, I'm going to make this world a different world, right? It doesn't have to be what it was. And I think that the reason we are able to be simpatico and can do the things we do, there's a lot that goes into being Sandra Campos, right? Like there's a lot that you bring to the table that is just uniquely who you are, whether it's your cultural heritage, your entrepreneurial spirit, there's a freedom to that that allows you to think broader, that I don't think all women realize they have it. What do you think about that?
I will say though, to be real and to be fair, the reality is that when you do have a CEO title, things do change.
That's true.
So I'm not going to say that it's only because of Sandra Campos really putting all her efforts into one thing. You do have a different level of visibility when you do have a CEO title of a visible company or a visible brand. And in this industry, as we know, we look up to those things. And we do have a lot of women and we have a lot of women CEOs. So we're at a different place than we were 20 years ago, 10 years ago. But, you know, it's not exactly a level playing field, I will say, right? So I'm not gonna say that at every point in my career that I was focused on it, because listen, I grew up in companies that they were tolerating women screaming and pounding on desks and walls and making people cry, and not just women, but men too, right?
Oh my gosh.
That in the industry. And I don't know if it still happens today or not in certain companies, but my point is that it was a different world. And what I was seeing that I thought I had to model, which I really wish I could go back in time and tell myself that was not to model, was I thought it needed to be this tough exterior, this more assertive and aggressive personality, because those were the people that were getting ahead. And I think it took a long time for me to see and understand who I am and how I can bring, you just called it my full self, right? Just what can I bring? What's the value that I can bring? And I'm not like the other person, and I might not be as bullish or as bold or as loud. And sometimes I might be somebody who is perceived to be something else. But at the end of the day, for me, it took getting through a career that was hard in many ways, because my personal life also came into my career life. And at some point in time, I had to make some decisions about moving into being an entrepreneur, because I was getting divorced and had 3 kids and being a single mom and kind of rising through the ranks of corporate organizations. And then you also have to ask yourself, like, where do I succeed? Who's going to really lift me up? I see it now, even as I sit on boards, and when you see different experiences and dynamics in boardrooms, and who's helping to lift you up and make you feel better about yourself, so that your voice becomes a voice where you can actually truly feel that you're adding and they're open to your additions, or this goes, you know, way back in terms of letting, and most of them have been men, to be honest with you, who have really been very embracing of me, giving me opportunities, not only one woman, but for the most part, it's letting you have those experiences to see what goes on, being curious enough to then say, what else is there? What else do I need to know so that I can actually go into that seat, be in that seat? And then the third part is like asking the question of what makes this successful? And by the way, I'm at that point where I'm saying this because I didn't always ask the question, like, what does success look like if I take this role? You know, where you were like, what am I going to do if I take this CEO role of a nonprofit? What am I going to do? Like, what does success look like? And I think, you can ask that question in every single role, no matter what your level is. You can try to put that back then into, how does that impact me individually? How do I bring my full self to this and be successful? And does your full self actually include what your background is, what your heritage is, you know? And I didn't know for a long time that I could bring that and what I could do with it. You know, what does that actually do? Like, how do I actually do it? And what I found was very simply that what it did was help me open doors for others. That's really what it did. And So that's for me now, the last 5 years has been focusing, and not that I haven't probably always done it, but certainly I've been more focused and more intently focused on opening more doors for others. So I've seen both, like you have, where the doors were closed, people had absolutely zero intent on helping. And I've seen the doors open. And I much prefer to be the one that's opening the doors.
Absolutely. But I just have to say, I'm having all the feels right now. And here's why. I talk to people a lot and they're usually not that open, right? And as you were talking about your journey, I was living it with you, because being in those environments at that time, right? The 90s, the early 2000s, like in order to be a woman and be taken seriously, you know, did you have to throw a calculator? Did you have to stamp? And I remember my first day at Express, right? I came in, I was an analyst, and I had gotten the job because I was recommended by one of my vendors who had gone there to be a merchant. I think I had been at my desk for 20 minutes and I hear two women. And at Macy's, they didn't really conduct themselves like that, right? They might do it, but you didn't hear it. But at Express, I hear these two female voices and they're calling each other every name but their name, and they are screaming. And then I hear something go, right? And I'm like, what is happening? Is it television on? What is going on? And I went around the corner and it was a merchant and her associate, and they were going at it, right? Like they were screaming and cursing at each other. And I was like, oh, is this what you have to do to be successful? Because they were getting, like 2 weeks later, they had gotten promoted, like there were all those things. And to fit into that, I'm a strong person. Sometimes people call me a beast. You know, my producer has known me since I was 11. I don't let people take advantage of me, but I'm also not the loudest person in the room, right? I'm not going to be yelling and screaming, and I'm not a big person. Like, I'm a small person. And to hear you tell the story of how you worked your way through, I mean, what did it take for you to get to the point where you're like, I don't have to be that. I don't have to do that. I know who I am. At what level did you get? Because you do have to be something sometimes to get to the next level. Like, that's the truth, right? You can be yourself, but you also need to know who you need to show up depending on who else is in the room, right? Like, I think that's something we don't talk about enough.
Depends on the phase you're in. The reality is that life changes as you get more experience, and it changes as you get older, and it changes in many, many different ways because you're experiencing things differently. You know, you'll see many times that celebrities like Meryl Streep will just be like, I just don't care anymore what anybody thinks about me. You do care a lot in your 20s and your 30s, let's say, or you do care a lot in the beginning of your career, or you do care a lot when you do care a lot what people think. And at the end of the day, you're working with people that may or may not really know you, and their judgments of you are based on whatever they want or don't want out of their own job. And as I've gone into turnaround situations, 50% of the people like you, 50% of people don't. 50% of people want change, 50% of people don't. And I'm just giving it an even, maybe it's even, you know, tipped towards more of the other side. And they don't really know you and they don't really listen. And there's a lot of blockers and tacklers. And, you know, that happens not just in our industry, it happens in general. Change management isn't easy, it's hard. And our industry is especially complex. We have so many different aspects of it. All we've done is add to it over the years as we've added e-commerce, as we've added digital, as we've added social, as we've added sustainability. It just makes everything so much more complicated. It's a lot to navigate, right? And what I think it's, I heard something yesterday. I was moderating a session with Molly Langenstein, who I was asked who I wanted to moderate a session with. I said, Molly, and because I've known Molly for a long time, but on the other side of the table, she was at Macy's for much of her career. And she said no to me on two different occasions when I brought two different businesses to her. One was Selena Gomez, when we were launching the Selena Gomez brand, and Selena was 15 years old. And I remind Molly of this. She's like, oh my God, I forgot. You know, it wasn't that she was saying no to me because she was saying no to me. It wasn't the thing that she thought was going to move the needle at Macy's, fine. And then also another time when I brought one of the divisions that we were launching for Juicy Couture, I brought that to Macy's and also got the no.
I said no to
me. So, but still, but I looked at her always throughout my career as somebody who was visionary. She always took the calls. She didn't say no to the calls. She didn't say no to meetings. She took them. She listened. She went through the due diligence process on her end. And I really respected it. Regardless of what the decision was at the end, I respected the fact that she was open enough to listen. And I think that doesn't happen enough in general. And I think women, unfortunately, sometimes we are our own worst enemy because we'll be like, you know, we're not going to open that door. And that's why I brought her up as an example of somebody who may have said no, and she did ultimately, but she opened the door to say, yeah, come in and tell us about it. Come in and show me what you want to talk about and let me think about it. And let me, and she's always been very business focused, a very savvy merchant. And I respect and value that, you know, versus somebody who really may not know, makes their judgments quickly, shuts that door before even trying to open it. And you never know what's going to happen down the road. You never know what's going to come out of relationships. You never know what you're going to learn or who you're going to be able to help. And I always say that it just takes one person to change somebody's life or journey or trajectory, whether it's in their career or their personal life. And I do believe that it takes one person. It also takes one person to shut you down that really hurts you and makes you walk the other way. And I don't want to be that person. I'm not saying I may not have been at times. I was definitely, if somebody said, and there's a friend of mine who worked for me and with me and on a couple of different occasions, she's still known me a long time. And she says, you know, you're one of those like hard school teachers that you give like really hard assignments. And it's like, you got to work really hard for that teacher. But when you get there and you get those assignments and you make that A on that test, you're like the biggest cheerleader. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, I want to help people grow as well. I want to grow. I want to continue to learn. But I want to be able to now more than ever, because we have the capabilities, we have the technology, we have the tools, we have the information. I want people to grow. I want women to be able to excel. I want to see an industry that doesn't have what we are looking at today, which is depleted earnings. Look at Fran Horowitz. Look at Fran Horowitz.
Look at what she's done.
She is killing it. I sent her
absolutely.
And I said, again, 21% ahead again. Every
crazy.
Single quarter, you're just killing it. I said, go and buy an island now already and invite me. Because what you're doing is phenomenal. I want that. I want to see that in our industry. And what it takes to me is everything that we know that's super fundamental, but it's all about the customer. And we know the customer because we are the customer.
We are right? the customer.
When we lose sight of that, we start to put everything into like, well, they or them. Who is they or them? Like, we know the customers, right? And we just have to stick to it, stay with it, stay focused, keep that DNA, whether it's a brand or a retailer. Ultimately, it's your consumer. Who is that consumer? Who are you focused on? So I kind of went into a different segue there with that.
No, but it's so important.
It goes into like how you make decisions. And then also how you open the doors for others, because look at what we have now. We have an incredible, amazing new era of entrepreneurs and of brands that are changing the dynamic for consumers today. Look at B. Dixon's company, who just got what it was majority investment for 380 something million
crazy
for the honeypot.
The honey pot is amazing. Like you're dropping all of these nuggets, right? The honey pot, she started with her grandmother in the kitchen, right? And she was asking her grandmother questions about her body, right? And how do you do this, grandma? How do you do this? And so she was telling her what she had done because she didn't have the money and they didn't have the products, you know, to take care of her personal areas. And they started playing in the kitchen, coming up with these different products. And now $385 million. And when did she go into Target the first time? Like maybe 5 years ago?
I don't know, but I was going to say this didn't happen overnight, right? There's no overnight success story anywhere, no matter what.
But still amazing.
It was persistence and focus.
That's right.
And that's where I go back, whether you're on the merchant side, whether you're on the sales side, whether you're on the brand building side, like it's focus. We have to have resilience, but you need those people that are going to believe in you. You need the coaches, the mentors, the sponsors. Otherwise it gets doubly or triple, you know, as hard, three times as hard as what it could be and what it needs to be. And so if we just open up those doors and we take those calls and we help people scale their businesses, help women and help women of color scale their businesses or scale their careers for that matter, in either case, we win. We all win.
We do. I call it mining, right? Real leaders are always asking questions and mining, right? And so if you're saying no more than you're saying yes, I don't think you see the big picture, right? And the big picture is, how do we open those doors? What are the questions that aren't being asked that you can ask so that you're learning something that gives you an advantage because you're constantly wanting to know more and who do we need to know and who do we need to connect so that we're building this new ecosystem and we're continuing to evolve. Because if we just sit with what we know, and I think that, you know, we started the conversation, you were saying how the industry is so dynamic, but this is just a lot going on right now. And I think there's a lot going on because a lot of this, like there are many female CEOs. There was just a post, I think was it Women in Retail Leadership, or I'm not sure who posted it, but all of the women CEOs in retail was posted yesterday, I think. And it was amazing to see, right? It was beautiful. So beautiful. But then it made me think about over the last year, all of the women CEOs who have been replaced with older men who think they have the answers. But with women, we ask questions. We want to know, we want to connect with our customer. We want to make sure that we are mining for the diamonds to give our customers so they can have awe and surprise and fulfill needs before they even know they need it. I feel like at some point we started in this industry to look more at the numbers and we lost track of that customer. And we also lost track of the internal customer too, and nurturing those who were in the company to fill the pipeline to leadership. Wow.
That is a very long conversation as far as I'm concerned, because I fully 100% agree with that, which is why during the pandemic, when I was getting calls left and right from mostly women who were calling and saying, how do I pivot? Mm-hmm. I have been on the wholesale side in sales. Everything's digital. It's gone online. I know nothing about it. How do I learn? Where do I go? What do I do? Or my husband lost a job. I need to get back in the industry, or whatever it was. I was getting all these calls and I realized that you mentioned the Macy's training program. I came into a training program. I worked three jobs for the first 3 years, both in retail on the sales floor, the buying program, and on the wholesale side. And throughout my career in the beginning, we got the chance, even though it may not have felt so great at the time, we were on the floors. We were folding denim, absolutely, hanging clothes. We were talking to customers, doing seminars. And while I may not have liked that at the time, wow, did that round out your career and the ability to understand who the consumer is, no matter if you're sitting in Wichita, Kansas, Nebraska, Memphis, or New York City. And it makes you see and understand things differently. And at the time, you know, Ralph Lauren, we were shipping Shelton sweaters in August.
Yeah. Right. Because that was the financial, this is when fall starts. So you have to have, ready in August, right? Like nobody's buying them, but we're set and it looks beautiful.
Yeah, I know. And it's just, so now when we're at this place in time, and I had hoped that during the pandemic, we as an industry would have learned that seasons, or what we've called seasons, there really aren't seasons anymore, right? The customer, the influencer is telling us, the customer is telling us what they want. They're not necessarily listening to us anymore about head to toe. They're listening to the influential people online, whoever that might be, whether it's content creators, influencers, celebrities, whoever you want to call it, but they're listening to them more than they're listening to the brands. So it's just really flipped a model on its head. And I think because of that, we have to be more conscientious of how we manage things. But instead, and look, you know, I've been there, I've done it. It's really hard to break through all of the doing things.
Yeah.
It's really hard to make people understand that we can't, we shouldn't, I'm not going to dictate to anybody, but we shouldn't have X, Y, or Z, you know, whatever your own internal metrics tell you that you shouldn't have and what you should be focused on. But at the end of the day, for me, it's knowledge. It's knowledge. And it's sharing the knowledge with others, and it's giving and opening the doors, even to junior associates. And if you're the president of a company, or you're heading a division, or you are a department manager, let those junior people into the room so they can even hear and absorb. Let them hear and absorb. And by the way, I was attending something yesterday where I thought it was a fantastic example, where there was a CMO who was talking about a recent campaign that they had done. Typically, the campaign might take 3 months. It would have cost $150,000. They decided to take it to their 20-something-year-olds in their department. And the 20-something-year-olds came back with a campaign that cost $25,000 that took them 2 weeks to execute. And it was the best performing conversion campaign of the season.
Awesome.
And it just goes to show that we don't have to do things the way we've always done them.
That's right.
We can open up, let people have a voice, let them have their turn, open up for ideas, because the world today is very different, right? And you need to be open to the fact that it's different, and that's okay. We don't have to do the same things that we've done the same way we've done them. So it was just a great example where I was like, yeah, that's perfect, because I want to know those tools. I want to know how to get that done too. Who wouldn't?
That's right.
You're saving a lot of money, you're saving a lot of time, and you're bringing other people into the loop while doing it.
Now, that sounds great. But we both know that there are people who, there are CMOs who don't see it that way. Right. But if you are, and this is a different question, but if you're speaking to a young person, a young woman who has those ideas, and she doesn't quite have the confidence to get it across, and she's working for that CMO who's like, nope, this is the way we've always done it, this is what works. What is your recommendation to her to get it in front of someone? How do you break through if you don't have that CMO who has the vision that things are changing and I don't know it all?
It's always easier to say than do, right? And especially from the outsider coming in. But I had somebody who said something to me, and it was about me. So I'll give this example and I'll go into what I think. But she had said, you know, Campos, you are not that person sitting on the sideline just waiting for the coach to call you in. You are the person jumping up and down saying, hey, I'm ready, I'm ready. Even if you're not ready, you're like, I'm ready, because I am ready to go in and learn. I am ready to go in and do. I'm ready to go in and add whatever value it is I think that I have. And I think I've been that way a long time. And I haven't always been as confident, perhaps, but I feel like I've always had ideas, or I've always felt really super connected to culture and understanding of consumer, et cetera. So I would suggest, and I do suggest people, you know, try to be that person that raises a hand. If you don't have the people that are looking or seeing you when you're raising your hand, try to get others that are also part of your team, so that it's more of a collective effort and it's more of a collective conversation and not just a one person conversation. It's really scary to be one person in a group that has to say, oh, by the way, what about this comfort? You know, what about this idea? It's much better when you have a group of people who are coming and saying, hey, we have an idea. We've been talking about it. This is what we have thought would be really great based on this data, based on this knowledge, based on this consumer that we have. You come in with more confidence when you have groups. So if you bring others along with you who might be your peers, who may be your manager, and you've got multiple layers, but bring others along with you, start to have the conversation, but always do it in a way to where it's not a competitive situation where you have to be the one and it's got to be about you, but it's ultimately about the best for the company, the best for the business, the best result for the consumer. And if you have that in mind and you bring some data along with it, and you know, then it's not like, well, this is what I brought to the table, mm-hmm. but it's about, here's what we can do together for this customer. What do you think about that?
Absolutely true. And I think that's a nugget that people need to like really listen to. Build your team. I talk about personal board of directors. You also need to have that at work and outside of work, right? Like that's kind of how you need to roll. Cause then you're going to, there's going to be someone on that team that's going to need the same type of support that you just needed. And so I think that's important to have.
And it does go both ways. So you want to mm-hmm. be the one that listens as well and can also support others who have those ideas so that it does work both ways.
Well, it's all about relationship building. Even when we talk about, and I talk to young people about this all the time, about networking and connecting, it's all about relationship building, right? It's not about, oh, that person, I know who, oh, they're going to be my mentor, or I'm going to have this person as a resource. No, that's not how it works. It's about reciprocating, right?
Why didn't you tell me that 20 years ago?
Well, if I didn't know it 20 years ago, I'm listening and I'm like, we've had the same journey. Like, this is just blowing my mind. Because of course, when you're in it, I thought like, oh my God, like I'm going through this by myself. Is anybody else like, look at, hey, right? Like I, you talk about the not being competitive. And I think women are the most competitive, right? Because it always seemed like there were fewer spots for us. And so who was going to be the one to get that spot? And it always felt so uncomfortable to me because I felt like, I don't see the men competing like this. Like, what is it? Like, and I think to a certain degree, to a bigger degree, the industry has changed, right? I think it's changed to a certain degree because the young people who are coming in now are different than we are, different than we were. They approach things very differently. And I think the industry is trying to catch up, but there still exists that competitiveness and not knowing where your support is.
Kimberly and Sandra, I think that's the perfect place for us to finish up part one of this month's episode of the Women of Colored Empowered Show. Again, I'm Hope Katz-Gibbs, producer of the show on the Incandescent Radio Network and incandescent.tv. Be sure to tune in for part two of episode two, featuring fashion industry exec and CNBC correspondent Sandra Campos, being interviewed by Kimberly Lee Miner, CEO of the Women of Color Retail Alliance, www.wocretailalliance.org. Be sure to tune in for part two of episode two on the Incandescent Radio Network and incandescent.tv, and of course on iTunes, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. We can't wait to talk to you again soon, audience. As always, thank you for being part of our Incandescent family. Remember, be incandescent.